Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Photojournalists documenting COVID-19 on the front lines have been, for many of us, our window into the suffering, grief, and empathy of this past year. Photographs have also played an important role in combating rampant misinformation about the coronavirus. As we continue to look at the role of imagery in communicating about this pandemic, we're turning to the journalistic choices behind these types of images. And for that, I'm joined by Corinne Perkins, North American editor for Reuters Pictures. Corinne, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you, Tanzina.
Also with us is Victor Blue, a freelance photographer who's been covering the coronavirus pandemic for The New York Times. Victor, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Victor, let's start with you. You have been covering the pandemic since the beginning. You have captured images that have been inside hospitals, and we've seen some of these photos. And I have to say, part of the reason why we're doing this is because I don't know if a lot of people really see what you see. There are photos that you have here of a couple that is absolutely devastated, wearing masks and crying in what appears to be an elevator. And there's another photo you have of presumably a healthcare worker, head to toe in PPE, walking through what appears to be a morgue. Tell us about your experience as a photographer in COVID-19.
Well, I was very fortunate to be assigned by the New York Times to work with the amazing reporter Sherry Fink to cover the pandemic from inside the hospitals in New York City. We photographed and reported from the ICUs and COVID wards of a handful of hospitals in the city. And we were able to witness the devastation that the virus was wreaking firsthand. So, yeah, those two pictures that you mentioned, especially the one of the couple in the elevator and then the same couple over the bedside of an ICU ward, that's Eliana Rendon and her husband, Edelson. She is the granddaughter of Carmen Torres, who succumbed to the virus in mid-April. And her extended family, who were spread out across the United States and Colombia, agreed to have us document the withdrawal of life support for her grandmother, Carmen Torres, at North Shore Hospital in Queens. The other image that you were referring to is of a guy named Alexis, who's a patient transport worker at the Brooklyn Hospital Center. And there's a picture of one of the morgue trucks, inside one of the morgue trucks that had become kind of ubiquitous in the city during the pandemic. They were parked outside the hospitals to deal with the overflow of corpses who were dying inside the hospitals.
Victor, have readers responded to your images?
Yes, certainly they have. It's been gratifying to see the response from readers of the newspaper. We've had, you know, reader comments and emails to me and on the story on the website as well. Folks who, you know, maybe didn't believe so much, or to whom the devastation of the pandemic of COVID-19 had been remote, but seeing the pain and the sacrifice of individual families, of people with names, people with, you know, we saw their faces, their home life changed, I think, the remove that people felt from what was happening.
Corinne, there was a Reuters photograph that similarly captured the attention of many of us. And it was of a man being comforted by a doctor wearing full PPE, presumably in his last moments. As an editor, as a photo editor, Corinne, how do you make decisions about which photos run in during this time?
I think it's about making sure that we have a variety of images that hit people and present the visual evidence of what's happening, so that there is that undeniability of what's going on. And we wanted to really make sure that things were as relatable as possible. So looking for those very human moments of connections, the embraces, the looking through the windows at your loved ones, you know, the last moments, the last rites and things like that as well. We've really tried to show a variety of hospitals we weren't able to get into as many of the New York hospitals. So we had to really look at different ways of presenting what was going on in New York in a different way. So we were looking at those mobile morgues that Victor mentioned, the funeral homes that were really inundated with bodies in Harlem, the drone images of Hart Island as there was mass burials during the peak of the crisis in New York. And then looking at different hospitals across the country, so rural Kansas to downtown Houston to the south side of Chicago. So making sure that we have a timeline of where the virus is hitting the worst and that we're presenting those moments to readers and making sure that they're aware of what's going on.
And Corinne, Reuters photographs can appear in many publications across the world. Do you ever look at the photographs that you receive and think this might be too much?
With this one, our tolerance for what has been too much has grown, I think, as there's still been people denying the virus. And we were talking with one of the doctors in Houston who has allowed us, afforded us a lot of access to his hospital down there, and asked him what is going to turn the views of the people who are still denying it. And he said, we need to get more graphic images out there of what's happening in the last moments of people's lives before they die from this virus. So the last time we went in, that's what we presented, the sort of CPR on a patient and his body being put into a body bag, and those really sort of more graphic final moments. Whereas at the beginning of the pandemic, we probably wouldn't have shown those ones, although we did have pictures of inside the refrigerated trucks and things like that.
Victor, there are some people who say we shouldn't have images of people who are dying out of respect for their families. What do you think about that?
Well, I feel that along with many aspects of our society and of our culture that were kind of peeled back or laid bare or we were forced to deal with during the pandemic, I think that this country's or our society's kind of complicated and sometimes dysfunctional relationship with death was one of those things. I think it's interesting that you hear some calls for less graphic imagery. I feel like those calls are oftentimes kind of politicized. And I don't personally believe that there's any dignity afforded to someone who has died because of circumstances outside their control, right? Because of political decisions by our leaders, not just at the federal level, but as well as our local and state level elected officials. Those folks made decisions that prolonged or increased the suffering of people. And for us not to see images of the suffering that those decisions caused, it does a disservice to the victims of this disease, I believe. I don't believe that showing them in their most difficult moments somehow diminishes their dignity in any way. And I think that, as Corinne said, you know, talking with the doctor in Houston, that these kind of images are the things that give people the information they need to understand what's happening to their communities, to their country, and to make the decisions they need to make politically, how they pull that lever, if they wear a mask or not, if they travel for Thanksgiving or Christmas, how they spend their money every day. You know, without these kind of pictures and without this documenting the severity of the pandemic, folks don't have the information they need to make the decisions they have to make every day.
Victor, a lot of the difficult images, I think that people, Americans, you mentioned a really interesting point about Americans' relationship with understanding death. And I think a lot of the images that we see in the news about death are often not in the United States, mass death in particular. How, Victor, you've covered conflict and other difficult photographic moments. How does this one square with you in this moment, covering the coronavirus pandemic and massive amounts of death in the United States specifically?
Well, I think that it's true. You know, I think this country has had a double standard in what it's willing to look at. I don't know if that's, you know, specific to the United States or to any country, but it's much harder to look in your own backyard. It's much harder to see death and suffering when you can't look at it as someone else or an other that's removed from you. These are our communities, and it's hard to face up to the pain of what our communities are suffering. There's no question about it. So, and for me, covering the pandemic was in many ways, it was like going through the looking glass in my everyday life, I was, you know, coming home, trying to stay safe, trying to keep my loved ones safe like everyone else. And then multiple times a week, I would enter the ICU wards and see what was happening inside them and see how people were suffering. And I felt compelled to get the message out. You know, Sherry Fink and I and our editors in New York Times worked hard to get those stories out. But the strangest thing was doing it in my own community. I'm used to getting on an airplane and flying somewhere, a culture that I'm not a part of, that I'm not particularly conversant in, and trying to interpret it and trying to document it as honestly and accurately as possible. And now it was happening in my own city in places I walk by every day. So it definitely had a through the looking glass kind of aspect to it. But I also tried to not adhere to that double standard. I tried to show what was happening in my own community and country the same way that I would in any other place in the world, and not pull my punches because I was afraid that it would upset people. If I'm not willing to do that in another country or about another culture, I shouldn't have been willing to do it here. And I was willing to do it.
Corinne Perkins is a North American editor for Reuters Picture, and Victor Blue is a freelance photographer who's been covering the coronavirus pandemic for the New York Times. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.